are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay originally aired on January 18, 2002.
Of all the varied forms of plant life which cloak and beautify the earth, none is more interesting than those weak-stemmed, semi-woody to woody plants we call vines. There's hardly a woodlot or hedgerow in central New York that doesn't harbor at least one or two species of vines. I was amused to find that most of the books I tend to use for reference seem reluctant to tell exactly what a vine is. In fact, none of them included vine in their index or their glossary. Webster, who doesn't find any word too mundane, describes vines as long, thin-stemmed plants that grow along the ground or climb various supports using tendrils. He describes tendrils as a slender part of a climbing plant, which supports it by clinging to or coiling around an object. An artful job of telling us what we need to know without revealing too much. It's important for vines to be able to climb. Otherwise, their tenure in the plant community would be all too fleeting. Take the ubiquitous and intrusive grapevine. Given time, grapes can pretty well carpet an open glade, but as soon as shrubs and trees get established, grapes would soon disappear for lack of sunlight. This is where tendrils come into play. Seen in time-lapse photography, which greatly accelerates the action, the tips of the plants seem to be casting around in a circle. When they strike a tree trunk, they begin to grow in a spiral around it. The tendrils work their way around smaller branches, and this helps to keep the vine from falling. In this way, the vine keeps pace with the growth of the tree and thereby obtains its required share of the sunlight. Some vines have holdfasts which allow them to form a bond with a brick wall or a tree trunk and thereby hold their position aloft. The Virginia creeper tendrils, for instance, when they come into contact with a solid surface, form flat discs and attach to the surface by a glue-like substance they produce. In the main, I believe vines tend to coexist with their support plants, especially those whose intolerance of shade makes it essential that they maintain their position in the canopy of the woods. Both wild grape and poison ivy demonstrate this. These two rank with staghorn sumac as the most invasive wild species. Both can persist in a mature woodlot if they can maintain their position in the canopy. Their methods of ascent are quite different. The poison ivy ascends the trunk of the tree, using thousands of holdfasts to secure it to the trunk. Grape depends on its tendrils to hold it aloft. Its stem hangs free of the main trunk of the host tree. Of the dozens or so species of vines that come readily to mind, most are important because of the berries they produce. Consider this list: grape, poison ivy, greenbrier, Virginia creeper, nightshade, morning glory, and bittersweet. I've listed them in order of their perceived importance to wildlife. Wild grapes are consumed by perhaps 100 species of birds and mammals. In addition, grape tangles in the pioneer woodlot provide nesting and resting site for birds, the latter especially in winter. The bark of the woody stem is a staple in the nest of many species of birds. Some people are surprised to hear of the wide variety of birds that feed on poison ivy berries. Martin and Nelson, in American Wildlife and Plants, list 50 species of songbirds alone that consume the seeds. They also note that deer, rabbits, and mice eat the stems and leaves. When I lived on Route 370 west of Baldwinsville, a pair of pileated dined regularly on poison ivy berries in a maple right across the road from our house. They came there in late afternoon, apparently unconcerned about the traffic which roared by underneath. Few people are aware that Virginia creeper, greenbrier, and nightshade are also consumed by fairly large numbers of birds and mammals. In studying the contents of crops and gizzards of ring-necked pheasants and grouse, I often found the berries and seeds of bittersweet nightshade, especially in winter. Native wild grapes have made significant contributions to our economy. Domestic varieties of grapes brought to America by the early settlers were unsuited to the northern climates. By combining them with native varieties, hardy strains that could prosper in the north were produced. That's part of the story of wine production in our area. CNE will be presenting a program on wines at Possibilities in Syracuse on February 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. More information on that on future programs. Well, that's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.